So Jenny and I had this idea last night that we wanted to try to read a couple poems together. And so this is a poem that visually on the page has a left side and a right side. I'm going to read the left-hand side, and Jenny's going to read the right-hand side. It's called Falling Apart in Sonata Form. So for those of you who know classical music, sonata form is a type of musical progression that was very popular in Mozart's day. And so Jenny's part is going to be explaining a bit what that means. Falling apart in sonata form. You don't want to break, but you did, would, and you dream how you will do it.
Because the shape of being human, I believe, is split.
Will transformation, Rilke said. What did he mean? And do you want it?
Or like a fist, opening and closing. In exposition, we hear themes stated for the first time, exposed.
You love the freedom.
Like two hands spread above piano keys, headphones jacked. I tap my fingers to the beat, always wished I could play.
It's open, colorless state.
A dream of unity, stepping into the forest, feeling every leaf.
Hate its shapelessness.
2 weeks in a rented studio, tacking sheets onto my corkboard, sonatas by Scarlatti, trees wave outside my window, birds, a cow.
So hard just to be. Of course, this is a cliche, but look around you.
555 sonatas by his death, black ink, hand-copied into soft red notebooks, 15 total.
These four walls, your walls, dead ficus, books, end table, so lightly acquired.
None of them followed sonata form. None long, 3, maybe 4 minutes each. Sunshine, torrents.
The way lives are, yours.
In development, themes wander through one foreign key after another, time and space.
It overfills us, Rilke writes. We arrange it.
Home, I leave my suitcase open for a week. Trees wave outside my window. The branches bend, but...
It falls apart. We rearrange it and fall apart.
Always snap in place. And the air, does it forget?
Ourselves. You wanted to undo yourself, but here you are again. Complete.
In recapitulation, the sonata brings us home. Because the shape of being human shifts, departed from but re-embraced like a cat.
You don't want to break, but you did, would, and you dream how you will do it.
Walking home after a long disappearance as if he'd never gone.
Like a cube of ice.
As if time left no trace.
Like a cup of cold water.
Just the tip of one ear.
Spilling wide open.
Newly bitten.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
I am so thrilled to be here. Thanks so much to USI and to Ron Mitchell in particular for hosting me. It's been amazing to get to know Jenny Mohlberg, who's a fabulous poet. So thank you all. I'm going to read several poems from my book, Into the Cyclorama. And I'll start with a poem that is in a series. There are 4 poems with this title in my book, and this is the first one. It's called New World. Take a building that you love, any building, then watch the video of it burning. True, the structure wasn't perfect. Collapsing ceiling, bad pipes. Still, it was your Rome. You can't be young like that anymore. Or wrong. You've learned there is no architecture, just nails, boards, paint. But to stand in the old place again, to touch that dusty furniture. Some days you even wish you were really, really stupid, a fat clerk in a Chekhov story, numbly treading water. Then all the snarls in your knitting would disappear. The streets you deplore for being crooked would converge into clear black lines on a map. You could sit by the open window, free to watch the world as metaphor. This book is dedicated to my grandmother, who passed away in 2008. She was born in North Korea before the war and was half Korean and half Japanese. Sort of problematic in the early 20th century. So she'd like to talk a lot about her history. This is called Portrait with a Blurred Tattoo. By her bed in a cheap gold frame, mother and son, still perfect, unwrinkled, same velvet eyes, their mouths childishly prim. Standing side by side. No, she's sitting. He's standing, embarrassed by the moment. His bare arms tanned and plump beneath her lightly resting hands. How he'd look at her, plastic bib around her neck, one slick, transparent noodle hanging from her lip, the sunken face, the eyes, still greedy. Then return to reading the paper, his mouth a fist. I don't look like her, but I have her bones. Her feet, her ankles, too much bone, her flighty wrists. Even the bunions, my mother warns me, mean bad luck. Her name, Betty, the one she adopted in English, I can still make out on her husband's arm. Shrunken like the arm, black lines that began crisp and glistening at the artist's needle, now fat as a marker, faintly purple. How she seemed to want to lose, shoulders quivering with laughter as she threw down her cards, face up. I'm out again. So the next poem is one of the very few poems in which I talk a little bit about what it's like to be a lawyer. I'm, as I like to say, a recovering lawyer, and I litigated for a number of years. It's hard to write about being a lawyer because it kind of means writing about your clients, which isn't that cool. But this is a poem from that period. It's called Dispatcher. Jonah is more popular than Jesus on the walls of the Chile catacombs. Leisurely reclining beneath his vine, at sea in his little boat. He's the man of sorrows, and our man too. No one wants to bear bad news. For years, I listened to 911 calls. Sorting photos on the conference table, a bullet tweezed from the lung, an arm peeking out from the wet blue tarp. All the mangled cars, starbursts in the glass, were heads hit. My job was to tell the story, and I was good at it. There was the man trapped in his bedroom while his house burned around him. Then the man calling in his own death. Before it, that white wall, before they found his head blown, his long legs scissored in the grass behind the bulky generators. His voice, square, rehearsed. Did you say a gun? She asked the empty air before the click. In the story of Jonah and the whale, I am the whale, full of Jonah, kelp, and all the nameless floating bits just below the surface of the ocean. I was born in Seoul, in South Korea, and I tried for years to write a poem about the experience of being a kid there and living in a system of relative privilege because my father was a member of the U.S. Army, and I went to a Department of Defense school while I was there. We moved back and forth a lot. And so I have this long multi-part poem, and I'll read a few sections from that poem. It's called Postcolonial Album, 1980. And a few words that would be helpful for you to know in Korean. One is the word for black market, which is amsijang. The other word is the word for Western or American things, weguk. In the book, Tommy goes to the doctor. There's a human half and a rabbit half. Everything Tommy does, the rabbit does, but you flip backwards from the end to read it. The rabbit sits nicely on the doctor's table, waiting for his perfectly orange carrot. Our house in Seoul had two front doors, one for the humans, one for the rabbits. The rabbits had no inside bathroom, no refrigerator stocked with ice cream. When the humans wanted to play, well, they walked outside and rapped on the little door. The door in the hallway was always locked, just a knob and four neat cracks in the wall. I would stand there sometimes, nibbling a cookie, in my bare feet, listening. Hearing whimpers from the puppy, she calls out, "Wegure," then quietly leaves the bed. Black figure, flying to the kitchen, out the door, down the stairs, too quick to see anything. She steps into the bathroom, where the square glass pane should be, black night and wind. Shampoo, conditioner, all Weguk brands she'd bought at the PX, gone. "Wake up," my mother whispers. "We've had a thief." Thief in Korean is toduk, the sound of two bricks striking as they fall to the ground, or a log in the fire that suddenly snaps in half. If you steal something rare and valuable, a Rembrandt, say, a diamond, you might be sexy, brilliant, tough. If you swipe cases of Coca-Cola from an unlocked basement, any U.S. products you can strap onto your handlebars at 3 a.m., maybe you suffer from a frontal lobe deficiency, maybe you struggled in the fifth grade, or you're rebelling against the post-colonial new imperialist infrastructure, the swift dictatorship, the long recession. Or maybe you just hate these people who, by virtue of their foreigner love, own a color TV and stereo, so you squat on their basement floor, unzip your pants, and shit before you run. You pawn their stuff at the nearest Amshijang by the six packs of Buds and Camels still packed in flimsy film. You roll the bills in your pocket and simply disappear. No one will track you down. No one cares. And no, I don't want them to. The last poem I'll read from my book is the result of me realizing that I tend to say the same thing a lot. One of the fun things about writing a book is you realize your own hang-ups and obsessions. And I realized that I had so many images of snow falling in my poems. This one is called simply Confessions of the Snow. I was the sky, crumbling thick and fast as a leper's skin. I was the good disciple who made up the story, the photographer who fucked his model, static on the radio. What I conceal might hurt you, so the night I let you watch me paper everything, blot the street lights, blur the rooftops, fences, concrete. Nothing sharp anymore. The world for one night, complete. Call it my gift to you. I am the pile of shit no one wants to step in. Commuters, tourists, blind man tapping his tennis balled cane on the pavement. I am the water spreading like a stain. The last poem I'll read is a newer poem. And I cheated because it ends with a line by a famous poet named Frank Bidart. This is called Breaking Up with Eros. This morning, for example, I miss your heat, how you flare my skin into a sun, whipping my cold, dead planets into orbit. To slip beyond the body's gate, glide through its chain link fence. I need to find something beyond just the physical. I've had enough from column A, proof you're more Apollo, less Saturn devouring his sun. Mostly, I want to be done with you. Take a match to my fingers, grip the shiny toilet with both hands, heave. Then it's night again. I'm out, walking back after dinner. The air is soft as chalk on heavy paper. My pores are open, ears open. I feel the bricks of the courthouse crumbling, smell the ivy crawling across them, bittersweet. It's you I want again. Your monstrous light knocking my stained glass window. Black ink of you, raining swift down, parched map of me, blurring all my capitals. That, at least, was irreparable. Thank you.